Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's articles are from the August 2025 edition. The Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. Our garden expert alleviates your growing pains. Dear Grumpy, years ago I asked you about controlling armadillos in my Florida yard. Now I'm up to 103 that have been trapped and either killed or relocated. I average 12 a year. I am dressing up as an armadillo this Halloween, and my husband is wearing an I'd rather be shooting armadillos t-shirt. What do you think, Sharon? I think you shouldn't give him any more reasons than he already has. Just kidding. But what's the problem? Can't deal with a few possums on the half shell, laying waste to your precious begonias, impatience, and lawn? So you resort to violence? Shame. You should rewild your yard instead, like lots of those garden bloggers suggest. Stop mowing and trimming. Let whatever wants to grow do so. Soon you'll be enjoying a miraculous, carefree melange of prickly pear, honeysuckle, poison ivy, popcorn tree, privet, bull thistle, rattlesnake weed, ragweed sandspur, and Bradford pear. This will result in a more diversified wildlife, including squirrels, raccoons, yellow jackets, banana spiders, scorpions, mice, skunks, and Burmese pythons. It'll be heaven. Rotten tomatoes. Help, Grumpy. I was so looking forward to juicy homegrown tomatoes this year, but now they have black spots on the ends. Where did I go wrong, Nancy? Don't beat yourself up. That would disturb the children. What you see is a common condition called blossom end rot. It occurs when the roots don't channel enough calcium from the soil to the cell wall. To correct this, sprinkle a cup of lime around the base of each plant. Also, maintain evenly moist soil, not too wet or dry, to help the roots keep the calcium moving. Swarming surprise. I have nearly finished a compost pile that I was going to move. When I dug into it, I discovered lots and lots of termites scurrying around. I've been told by some to get rid of the pile as soon as possible, while others say not to worry about it. What's your vote, Nancy? If the compost pile in question doesn't sit next to your house, chill out. The termites are consuming cellulose in the wood that's present in the pile and actually speeding up its decomposition. Millions of termites that you never see inhabit the ground all around you. Unless wood from your house is in contact with the soil, and that soil hasn't been baited or treated, they're unlikely to do any damage. Leaping lizards. I live in Fort Lauderdale, where invasive iguanas seem to equate plants to a salad bar set out just for them. Can you recommend colorful options for containers that these lizards won't consume? Sherry. You could eat these reptiles. I hear they taste like chicken. Plus, they're locally sourced and sustainable. Look for the official iguana cookbook by Joe Manny to find recipes. Not game for that? The following plants are said to be turnoffs for these lizards: oleander, croton, chenille plant, bird of paradise, Mexican petunia, purple heart, ixora, cortelline, copper leaf, and society garlic. Seeing red. My mom just got 4 red hydrangeas. Are there any soil supplements she needs to add to make sure they stay that shade? Vicky. The flower color of a big leaf hydrangea, the kind that your mother has, is largely determined by the soil's pH and the presence of aluminum in it. A soil test will reveal this. If the pH is below 7, acid, and aluminum is available, the flowers turn blue. If the pH is above 7 alkaline and aluminum isn't present, the blooms turn pink or red. An easy way to raise the pH is to sprinkle a cup of lime around the base of the plant each year. Aluminum is less available in alkaline soil. Grumpy's gripe of the month. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but all of these highway medians planted with wildflowers could be unwitting death traps. It seems that the bees pollinating these blooms aren't terrifically traffic aware. Fortunately, I have an easy solution. We just need to establish a national system of Bee Smart schools that will help teach these industrious insects how to read Bee Aware signs, how to recognize Bee Safe highway crossings, and how to fly between vehicles, not straight into them. I expect there'll be a considerable buzz about this in Washington. Waikakee Elephant's Ear. This fabulous new perennial makes adding eye-popping color a walk on the beach. Garden looking a little bedraggled? Place a pot or two of Waikakee Elephant Ear on your patio, porch, or deck, and let the party begin. Glossy green leaves with white and deep pink or purple veining will have you asking for a second pink drink. The foliage forms a compact mound 3 feet tall and wide. Give it full to part sun and moist soil. A member of our Southern Living plant collection, it's winter hardy to about 15 degrees. If you live where the weather gets colder, bring it inside and put it in a cool spot. Don't have sun in that room. Cut off the leaves and force the plant into dormancy. Then, next spring, take it outside and water it so new leaves will sprout. Steve Bender. Baking with Nana. My sweetest memories were made in my grandma's Georgia kitchen by Ivy Odom. One of the things I'm most thankful for about my childhood is that we lived in the same town as my mama's parents. They came to every piano recital, choir performance, award ceremony, and even the few sporting events I reluctantly tried as a child. I quickly learned sports were not my strong suit, and I should stick to the more artsy endeavors. I went out to eat with Papa on Tuesday nights and played bingo with Nana at the country club on Thursdays. So many of my happiest moments involved the two of them. But my most cherished memories are the ones from their house. I spent many Friday nights over at Nana and Papa's. I can remember waking up to the smell of bacon frying and grits bubbling on the stove. Every time I make bacon in my own house now, which has original heart pine flooring like Nana and Papa's house did, there is something about the smell that takes me back to Saturday mornings on Folsom Road. The Golf Channel would always be playing in the background. The soft claps were the soundtrack to our slow Saturdays. We'd play out in the yard or in the playhouse Papa had built just for his three grandchildren, while Nana made lunch of pimento cheese, salad, fried chicken, and sliced tomatoes. In the afternoons, we crowded around the breakfast table to make tea cakes or made potholders on antique red metal looms. Nana taught me to cross-stitch and tat. Papa taught me how to hit a golf ball and drive a lawnmower. So much of who I am today is because of afternoons with them. Papa passed away a few years ago, and there isn't a day that goes by that I don't miss him. I'm lucky enough to get to see Nana every time I go back home to Moultrie, and I'm even luckier that she, reluctantly, agreed to come to Birmingham to cook with me in my own kitchen for a photo shoot. We made tea cakes, recipe to follow. Still, one of my favorites from her recipe collection. While she loves to cook, it took a few glass bottle Coca-Colas to convince her to smile for the camera. I'll be forever thankful for the chance to capture that afternoon forever in my new cookbook, My Southern Kitchen. She might not admit it, but she had as much fun as we used to on our treasured Saturdays together. Nana's Tea Cakes, active 20 minutes, total 50 minutes, makes about 4 dozen cookies. 3 1/2 cups all-purpose flour, 2 cups granulated sugar, 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon kosher salt, 1 cup butter cut into 1/2-inch pieces at room temperature, 2 large eggs lightly beaten, 1 tablespoon vanilla extract. Step 1. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Line 2 baking sheets with parchment paper. Whisk together flour, sugar, baking powder, and salt in a large bowl. Add butter pieces to the bowl and mix with your hands, pinching the butter into flour mixture with your fingers until it resembles chunky, wet sand. Add the eggs and the vanilla into the flour mixture and mix well with your hands until the dough comes together into a smooth ball. Step 2. Roll dough about 1 tablespoon at a time into gumball-sized balls and place on prepared baking sheets about 1 inch apart. Bake 7 to 9 minutes or until lightly golden brown and set, rotating the baking sheets halfway through. Let the sheets cool completely on a wire rack about 20 minutes. 2 takes on tea cakes. Although I followed her handwritten recipe card exactly during the photo shoot, Anna couldn't stop herself from telling me I was doing it all wrong. The recipe card gives 2 different instructions. Option 1, roll the dough into balls about the size of a gumball and place on a baking sheet. Or option 2, roll the dough and use a small round cutter or shot glass to cut the cookies. The problem is that these 2 methods give very different results. One is thinner and more wafer-like. The other is thicker and chewier. Growing up, we always rolled and cut our tea cakes, but the thinner ones got a little too crisp for my liking. When I tried the gumball method, I much preferred the chewier cookie, so that's what I called for in this recipe. However, when I started forming the gumballs during the photo shoot, Nana immediately took over and said the thinner rolling pin method was better. We had everyone on the set try them, and it was split on which style of cookie people favored. According to her, my version isn't a true tea cake, but it does taste good. Since we couldn't agree, I'll let y'all decide which you like best. We have come to the end of our program. I'm Joyce Davis, and I will be back soon.